Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Behind the Veil, a show that provides insight into the world of weddings. Welcome back. I'm your host, Keith Willard. I'm actually out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean at the moment. We love technology. God bless our platform. So this week, I'm actually going to turn it over to our co-host, Marcy Gutenberg, with An Affair to Remember by Marcy. Hi, Marcy.
Hi, Keith. How are you doing? You must be excited.
I'm good. You know, I'm super relaxed. I'm kind of like out here watching the ocean go by. And
you're chilling like a villain.
Oh, my God. It's the best. It is the best. And the fact that I can still run the show from out here is incredible. It just shows you what technology has done. But it also proves that being self-employed doesn't have to be limited to your space or to your home.
We rely on each other.
Right? Oh, and there's Brooke Logan Stoner. Hello, Brooke. Hello, beautiful.
Hello, Brooke. Beautiful Brooke Logan Stoner. Hi, beautiful Marcy.
Jeez. How are you today?
How's that trip, darling?
I'm good. How many people are on your ship?
So the ship has the capability of having 5,500, and there's only 1,100 on the ship.
Wow. So you have 25% occupancy, I think you mentioned.
It's crazy. I cannot even believe my luck on this cruise. But anyway, so ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to bow out. Marcy Gutenberg is going to take over all behind the scenes. But ladies, I know you've got this. I will see y'all later.
We'll see you later. Thanks,
Bye.
Kate.
Bye. Rude. So, he didn't tell me he was doing that. He wanted me to show up.
He told me a few minutes ago. So that's good. It's very,
well,
very
he,
good.
He deserves
We have the most amazing guest today. You know, Jeffrey Shaw is a leading voice for the self-employed business owners, and he's going to be on today to talk about top-rated podcasts, The Self-Employed Life, and he's heard in 200 countries by 30,000 listeners in a month. So, welcome. I wanted to just point out that his recent book came out in May called The Self-Employed Life, Business and Personal Development Strategies that Create Sustainable Success, as well as you are a TEDx speaker. So congratulations to you on that. That sounds amazing.
Oh,
can you tell
you.
Me a little bit about your background?
Sure. Well, I'm excited to be here because my background fits so perfectly. And Brooke, by the way, hey, it's nice to meet you.
Hi.
Marcy and I had a chance to talk before. And, you know, we ditched Keith, so it's just us now.
I think Keith has ditched us.
So my background is, I've been a portrait photographer for 37 years. So I'm really excited to be here because I'm able to speak on the business aspect, but I totally get the wedding industry. Now, I will tell you, I photographed weddings for like the first 2 years that when I got out of photography school and started my own business. And I actually did really what people loved, you know, the way I presented myself at weddings. You know, I got to know the industry, but I tell you, 2 years in, I realized I just don't have the stomach for it. So all of you that are in the wedding industry, kudos to you. Like, you're some of the thickest skinned people, I think, on the planet. And I just knew I couldn't do it. I just knew that it wasn't a sustainable lifestyle for me because I lost a week's worth of sleep for every wedding. I just found it so, and so, you know, kudos to all of you. But I love being able to be here now in support of an industry that is my roots and that I still do. I mean, when I switched away from weddings, I switched to doing on-location family portraits for very affluent families. So I had a very niche business, and I still do very little of it today so that I can devote most of my time to coaching small business owners.
Okay. And I know that you had talked about in the articles that I had read, you talk about an ecosystem. Can you talk a little bit more to that point?
Yeah, this has been, you know, first of all, I like to provide something tangible for people to do something with. You know, there's tons of thought leaders and gurus out there, but you know, one of the biggest mistakes they make is they don't make stuff tangible and systematic. And you know, I'm one of the rare individuals probably on the planet that I've never had a traditional job. I've never received a paycheck from anyone. So I've been self-employed my whole life, starting out selling eggs door to door when I was 14 years old. I lived in the country. Became a professional photographer and opened up a storefront by the age of 20. This is all I know. So to use the expression, like, I'm in the trenches, that's an understatement. Like, I know the trenches of self-employment. So I wanted to create a way that people could actually make a measurable difference in their lives and in their business. And when I really looked at it, I realized after 37 years of being in business, and I've been coaching others, by the way, for over 12 years. I've received over 1,000 hours of training as a coach and leader. So I wanted to put together, when I looked at everything, my own businesses, the countless people that I've helped build their businesses, I realized that our businesses are very much like an ecosystem in nature. In that, like, you know, if you take an ecosystem in nature, the Great Barrier Reef, the Everglades here in Florida, if one element is off in the ecosystem, it can destroy the entire ecosystem. Okay. And our businesses, particularly when we're self-employed, is a lot like that. Now, my caution here, I'm not saying that your business is in threat of failing or going under, but here's what I can guarantee you. If something is off in the ecosystem of your business, which I'll be more specific in a moment, but if something's off in the ecosystem of your business, I can guarantee you, you're working harder than you need to. Because you're not in flow. If everything's not in alignment and it's a healthy, thriving ecosystem, you're working against the current. Mm-hmm. You know, you're working out of alignment. So
what I decided
and really after years of study is developing this ecosystem consisting of three main elements. Those three elements are personal development, business strategy, and daily habits. Okay, now the daily habits, the result of consistent daily habits are consistent mindsets, which we so desperately need when we're self-employed because we're all over the place, right? Because the world of being self-employed is so up and down. So those three elements, personal development, business strategies, and daily habits, they're unique in that. I'll break them down briefly. So personal development, this is way beyond self-help, if you will. This is about developing yourself from the inside out to get the outer results in your business that you want. I like to relate it to capacity. Okay, so here's the strategy and path to success in your business. Anytime you want your business to be more successful, your business to go to the next level, you first have to develop yourself to increase the capacity for the success that you want. Okay. The problem, one of the core problems of entrepreneurship, and I think one of the core problems with a lot of thought leaders and gurus, is they keep giving us more things to do and more social media platform. Hell, now I got to do TikTok. Like, more things just keep coming along, right? So what happens is we're getting more filled up, but we don't do the inner work to increase the capacity of what we can handle and what we're prepared for. For example, one of the core things I have to work on with my coaching clients is increasing their capacity of what they believe they deserve. It's one of their biggest stumbling blocks because we all have an established limit to what we believe we deserve, what we believe we're capable of, what we think we're deserving of in the world, right? That has to be increased so that all the hard work that you apply in your business has a place to go. Okay, that's the importance of personal development. Business strategies. The other reason why that's an important part of the elements is, of course, we're all going to be very action oriented. You don't go into business for yourself, or you certainly aren't an event planner or wedding photographer. You're not in the wedding business unless you're willing to work hard. That's never the problem. The problem is whether it's the right strategies. The problem is whether it's what I refer to as right sized, because by example, so much of what we see in the world are businesses that are much larger than ours, and 90% of businesses are transactional based when we're in relationship based businesses.
Right.
So big business likes to talk about building relationships, but they don't do it. They don't know relationship like we know relationship. Because when you're in businesses like ours, it is all relationship based. Case in point, how often do you see in business when a business makes an offer for new customers only? If you're in a relationship all the time, but if you're in a relationship-based business, it's the worst thing you can do, because you've just destroyed all the relationships of the people who built your business to that point in the first place.
Very true.
Right. So we need business strategies that are right-sized, right side up for us. And then the third element of daily habits is really that holds it all together. You know, it's a quote I say in my book, which, by the way, here's the book, The Self-Employed Life. One of the quotes that's really been picked up by a lot of people in the book is that the risk is not in what you build. The risk is in not supporting what you build. Okay. And it's so true. And the support comes in the form of consistent daily habits that take maybe 15, 20 minutes a day and that need to be customized for you. So you stick with them. But the result of that is that it evens out the mind. It levels out our emotions so that we're not all over the place being yanked in all the directions, which is inherent in being a small business. So there's the ecosystem as summarized as I can possibly make it for you.
Okay. So, I mean, that kind of fits in line with what I'm a self-employed. So I have my own company, Invitation Company. And this past year, I myself went ahead and strengthened my website and strengthened my abilities to be more involved with social media. I was not that savvy with it, and I'm getting a lot stronger with it, but it's definitely a learning curve. And there's so much information that you can obtain through other people out there. It's just finding the right resources. Yeah. And I think that you kind of talked to that point. When you talk about, I noticed that one of the things that you also mentioned in your bio was you talk about intentions. Mm. And I know that's a very strong area that most of us don't always fulfill. But can you expand on that a little bit more so that people have a better idea?
Yeah, I'd love to. Because again, just like I said earlier, I'm always looking for ways that actually get results. Because one of the key challenges of being self-employed is that we need every minute to matter. You know, we just don't have time to waste. I mean, we're busy, right? And you know, the proverbial 100 hats or juggling a lot of things. So I take great care when writing a book, when working with my coach and clients, I take great care to give advice that is efficient and effective. And affirmations, intentions and affirmations, we'll refer to them as intentions. Intentions is a really important one to me because you know what? They work, right? Intentions, affirmations, they work. And partly the reason why I know they work is because of not only my own personal experience, but on my podcast, The Self-Employed Life, I've interviewed so many what you would say are very logical-brained people, you know, scientists and researchers. And I love hearing someone of that ilk to say, yeah, I thought intentions were a bunch of malarkey until I learned how to do them right. And they changed their mind. They realized they work. So, and there's actually a fantastic book, which I reference in my book called The Intention Experiments by Lynn McTaggart. It's quite an old book, but super powerful, actually making you believe intentions work. Where, I mean, one of the case studies in the book is how a multitude of people got together in Washington, D.C. and with an intention, lowered the crime rate.
Right.
Crazy, crazy stuff. Wow. So the key is intentions have to be done with a structure. And here's the structure. This is like the golden secret because everyone just holds some kind of vague intention. It's what I refer to as a from to format. Okay. You have to be very clear what your intent, I want to go from blank to blank. That's the way you need to hold the intention. That's the way you need to recite it in your mind. I'll give you a specific example. I was just on another podcast interview, and they asked, like, we were talking about some different challenges we face, et cetera. And I was saying, you know, one of my biggest challenges is that having been for so many decades a high-end portrait photographer, I didn't need to be known by many people, right? I was very well known against a very small audience, right? So, because they were the super affluent in the US. So, and it was a very high ticket item. So I only needed 150 photo shoots a year, and 75 of 80 of them were going to be repeat. So as far as being introduced to new clients each year, it was a really small number, 60, 70 people a year. But now I'm a coach, I'm a professional speaker, I'm an author, a podcast host, I have a YouTube channel. Now I need an audience of massive amount, right? So that's been the biggest mindset shift for me. So my intention in order for me, and I still work with it. My intention that I recite as I walk my dogs in the morning is I want to go from being loved by a small audience to being liked by a massive audience. Okay.
Very smart. Yeah, I like that.
It's very from to, but it gets it helps me get out of my own way because, you know, it's nice to be loved by a small group of people, and I'm so used to that, but it's not getting me to where I want to go in life. It's not enabling me to make the impact on the world that I want to make. And I've had to give up. It's like, it's nice to be loved, but the truth is I only need to be loved by a small number of people. I need to be liked by a massive number of people. And I need to change my brain on that.
I like that you said that because I think that is the biggest problem that a lot of entrepreneurs have is that they get inside their own head. Yeah. And they kind of get in the way of themselves succeeding and furthering their business.
100%. I mean, so, that's why.
I did it for many years. I know.
Oh, I mean, that's why, you know, and again, we can call it mindset, call it so many different things. But at the end of the day, I almost don't care what you call it. I'm in the trenches, just like all of you. It's like, I just want to give you the tools to make a difference. And that's why this book, you know, my book, The Self-Employed Life, it is a third personal development, a third business strategies, and a third daily habits and mindset. So at the end of the day, it's 2/3 inner work, 1/3 action. And that is completely opposite. First of all, it's almost non-existent in the world of books because when you write a book, believe me, I have a publisher, the publisher is great. And that's why I went with this publisher because they're open-minded. But you know what? Amazon doesn't even have it right. In Amazon, you have to categorize your book. Is it entrepreneurship? Is it business? Is it self-help? I'm like, it's all of that when you're self-employed. Mm-hmm. Like, why isn't there a category that's a little more inclusive?
They right? need to broaden that for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's why this book is, it's really meant to change people's lives by giving them the personal development strategies so that, because believe me, it's chock full of very specific business strategies, things like hug marketing, emotional journey. Like I give very specific, proved, you know, tried and proved business strategies, but I don't want to give you that until I first help you increase the capacity for the success so that your effort pays off.
Okay. Okay. And where do you see like the vision of what's going on with our market now, that we're coming out of the pandemic? What do you foresee in the marketplace for employees?
It's hard to say because so many people struggled in such terrible ways through the pandemic, but it is ripe with beauty, honestly, because, and you know, I always say right at the beginning of this pandemic, I said, this is my third rodeo. I mean, I lived in New York. My business was based in New York during 9/11. I survived the greatness, right? And I was living in New York City. I mean, I lost 3 friends in those towers, clients, all my clients are all Wall Streeters. My photography clients are all Wall Streeters. Mm-hmm. They were all affected. And then of course there's the Great Recession and it was my clients that were the ones on the news. So it was, you know, I've been through all that. So when this came along, I was more prepared, but here's the key. On the other side of a crisis is our emotions that we're all experiencing now. We're experiencing vulnerability. We're experiencing uncertainty. We're experiencing, just significant change. Everybody's reevaluating their lives and reprioritizing. These are the most tender sides of human nature, right? This is when people are real. So as a business, this is such a ripe time to show up as the business that is willing to get people. The business that's willing to understand, the business that's willing to be empathetic, the business that's willing to, particularly in this case with the pandemic, is to have a broad range of non-judgmental presence about you. Because you know what? Some people are feeling very safe now that they're vaccinated. Other people still want to wear the mask because they're uncertain. Mm-hmm. Other people are living their lives as normal. Other people are trying to protect their young children who can't be vaccinated. Some people are forging straight ahead. Some women are choosing to not be vaccinated because there's uncertainty about how it affects fertility. So there's such, even in a single family that you might be serving, there's such a broad, imagine being at a wedding planner or an event professional. there is such a broad range of emotions that you will deal with in a single family, right? One family member wants to have 300 guests. The other member wants to cut it in half. What, I mean, it's all over the place. The opportunity right now is so ripe to understand people at a much deeper level, to show up as the business with more heart, more, as the tagline of my podcast is, business with a soul. This will set you up for all the success you can want in the future. Because if you're that business, if you're that professional and that person, that customer is going to keep coming back to you because you were there for them when they needed it most. And they're the ones that are most likely to tell other people. Like, it is, every crisis is a filter. It filters out the crap.
And what it just does. What do you think about, like, people who are not necessarily business owners, but they're like the employers? How do you think that the entrepreneur market is going? Do you think most people will stay as entrepreneurs, or do you think that there'll be a little bit of a shift at some point that people will go back into the corporate world or into the hotels or such?
Yeah. You know, I think it's all that. And that's what makes this time so interesting. I mean, it's crazy to figure it all out right now. I mean, let's face it. I was just recently, my first trip recently was back to New York, and the hotel wasn't storing baggage. Now, I hadn't planned on that because I was up there for a photo shoot and I was visiting friends. I had massive amounts of equipment with me. Uh-huh. I checked out of the room and found out the hotel isn't storing luggage, right? Reason being is they're short staff. They don't have the bell captain staff that they usually have. And I walked around to other hotels and found out they were all that way. Okay. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So the hotels don't, in New York anyway, most hotels don't have the staff for people to be checking in luggage, right? It wasn't that they were worried about COVID residing on the luggage. They don't have the staff. So there is a true and real problem in the world right now. Restaurants are facing the same problem. Restaurant sales are at a record high, higher than pre-pandemic, but they're short to help. Right. So there, it is such a mixed bag. What I believe is going on is what I had said a moment ago. Everybody's reevaluating their lives. Mm-hmm. People are going to choose to stay home at record rates. And if they're either going to find a job remote or they're not going to go back to the job if their job isn't willing to let them work remote. We have record numbers of people becoming self-employed. There is in May's job report. Let me see. I think the U.S. added like 541,000 jobs in May. There were 345,000 or so applications for new businesses. There are almost as many new businesses being created as people returning to work. So I think all can work. I really do. I think the biggest fundamental shift for employers is going to come about from them understanding this, that they need to shift, because the worker of today and in the future is a self-employed mindset employee, right? Wow. That's workforce of the future. It's because that's why I say it's a mixed bag. There are plenty of us that embrace owning our own businesses. There are plenty of other people that aren't interested in owning our own business, but they actually want all the characteristics that we as self-employed business owners appreciate: autonomy, remote work, freedom of schedule, work when we know our biorhythm is best. I'm a late night worker. 11 o'clock at night, I'm on fire, right? Okay, in a traditional job setting, I may not be able to do that. Employers, if they want to recover and they want to get those workers back, they're going to have to understand that. They're going to understand that people like Keith can be on a cruise ship and still get the job done. And that, I think, to me, the whole world is going to look self-employed, right? You're going to either own your own business and literally be self-employed, or the workforce is going to shift in a way that we have a lot more autonomy than we've ever known for employees. And that's actually how employers are going to get the best work out of them. And it's built into the coming generations. I mean, millennials and Gen Z will not have it any other way, honestly. Yeah.
Well, and you know, I just jumped back in because I wanted to. Can you guys hear me, by the way?
We can, yes.
Okay, perfect. So I wanted to go back into that conversation that you were having about not having enough employees at the hotels, because one of the major issues that I am having as an event planner is getting people to respond to me for contracts, for room blocks, for catering, for sales. It's just crazy because I feel like the hotels are missing out on a massive amount of revenue, especially now, because weddings are off the charts. They are off the charts. I've never been busier since I started my own business than right now.
Yeah.
And yet I can't seem to book a hotel to save my life. And that's because they don't have the employees.
Yeah. It is, to your point, it's a missed opportunity. I'll tell you a little childhood story here, which I think emphasizes this. I was the biggest geek and nerd as a kid. I mean, I've loved business since I was such a little kid. So my family had a tradition of going out to dinner on Mother's Day. Mother's Day is the biggest restaurant day of the year. So we had a family, it was my grandmother would plan it, and we'd go to a different restaurant every year. There's probably about 20 something of us, because I had a big Portuguese family.
Just a small group.
Small group. Yeah, it was like 26 of us going out for dinner. And we tried different restaurants each year. What I noticed as a kid was that on those days, that busiest day of the year, restaurants would limit their menu because they wanted to be able to handle the volume in the kitchen. They would jack up the prices, and the service would be the worst it ever is. And they would blame the whole thing on, we can't help it. Yep. It's the busiest day of the year. And I sat there as a little kid thinking, this is about the dumbest thing. Like, you've got the most eyeballs on your business right now. Why are you doing your worst job? Why aren't you giving us more choices of what you're good at, doing your best job? That's what's going on right now. Right now, we have a lot of businesses that are absolutely missing the opportunity.
That's a missed opportunity. I was just going to say that.
Right?
You have the time to shine right now. Think outside the box and slay it. And instead, you have a few companies that will, and then you have some that are going to do exactly what you just said.
Yep, exactly. And it is the perfect time to slay it. Like, you know, just to, like I said, show up as the most human of the businesses. That's exactly what's going to separate you from the pack moving forward, and you're going to stand out.
Well, and you know, even if hotels wanted to do a preset wedding package, just like you were talking about for restaurants, they reduce their menu in order to be able to provide the service, knowing that they could showcase the best of their best.
Yeah.
The hotels could be doing exactly the same thing. Instead of having to be customized every single package, have like A, B, C, because I'm telling you right now, clients would jump at that.
You know what one of the number one things, you know what, one of the number one things people want, and I say people, consumers, okay? One of the number one things consumers want today is for the experts they hire to make their decisions for them. It's the biggest, to talk about missed opportunities. Yep. And being in the photography world, I saw this all the time. It's like, why are you showing your clients 500 proofs of their wedding? Like, show them the best of the best, because you're causing teaser, their brains to shut down.
Give them a little sip.
The example I love to give is, can you imagine going to the doctors? Let's say you have a cholesterol problem, for which there are probably 100 medications for cholesterol, right? Can you imagine going and have the doctor open and say, pick one, anyone? It's like, oh my God, isn't that what you hired the doctor to tell you? Like, give me choices of two and tell me the side effects, like, I'll and be done two. With it, right? So Keith, your point is perfect. It's like, that is one of, curation is one of the most underrated, appreciated values to a consumer, because they hire experts. To me, here's my definition of being an expert. I don't care what industry you're in. To me, the definition of an expert is to provide your clients with what you know they need that they don't know to ask for.
Exactly. My gosh. You hit it so on the head. When I meet with a client, I always ask them several questions in advance to find out what they're looking for and then what they really need, because I can show them thousands of invitations, but as you said, it's going to be brain overload. Yeah. So my goal is to show them just a few things that are going Correct. To be things like you're talking, curated, because I know what I have, but Right. you don't know what I have. So why would I show everything when we can hone in and really get to the bottom of the barrel to figure out what do you really need? What do you really want? And match them up because, Absolutely. You know, their time is valuable and, yeah. and yeah. I don't want to waste their time.
And that's what they're hiring you for.
Have some more success.
That's what they're hiring you for. And I used to have a trick as a photographer, and I showed proofs. If I'm working with a control freak client and they exist, mm-hmm. I would put the one I wanted them to choose, I'd put it third. Because they would assume that the first one I showed them is the one I wanted them to choose. Mm-hmm. Put it third. By the time yeah. they get to the third option, they think they discovered it. Meanwhile, I planted it. Like, that's the one I wanted them to choose all
Good
along.
Point. I always do it like the first two. But actually, now I'm going to change it. That's actually smart.
The third one, like, by the time they get to their third choice, whatever it is, whether it's an invitation or portrait proofs, they right. think that they've already gone through your top two. So when they said, mm-hmm. so it gives them this sense of control, which a lot of people just oppose your position, but you're still, the point is you're still taking control as an expert to do the best thing for your clients. So, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. I have a question. So, you know, we talked about the fact that, you know, more people than ever are becoming self-employed. And yet there are people out there that would love to stick with brands like Marriott or Hyatt or any of these larger brands that stay in the corporate world, so to speak. How would somebody go about talk to their leadership about adjusting how they do their employment to be able to have that kind of freedom, to have that a bit, that autonomy that we talked about before we went on air? Yeah. You know,
I interviewed his name is Clint Pulver, and mm-hmm. I interviewed him for my LinkedIn live show, which, by the way, is usually Tuesdays at 2, but I gave it up today to be with you.
Thank you very much. You know, I'm on vacation. I'm not in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, exactly. So no excuses.
Exactly. But Clint wrote a book called I Love It Here. And I interviewed him because of something he said on social media that stood out to me, right? What he said is that, and it's so true, one of the reasons why we have an employee shortage right now is people are leaving their jobs in droves because they right. didn't like the way their leader handled the pandemic. Okay. So what's going on now? This is, they always say, what's that adage that people don't leave the job, they leave their manager?
Yes. People 100% businesses, they quit management.
Yep, exactly. So now we have people leaving brands that they loved because the leaders of those brands didn't behave well, right? They didn't handle the stress well. Maybe they didn't handle their employees well. Maybe right. they're disrespectful. It's tons of reasons. So again, I think it's going to filter its way out. Those brands that we want to uphold, the Marriotts, the Starwoods, the Hyatts, the brands that we want, honestly, I think most consumers want brands that they have an affinity for to succeed. Yes. I want the brands that I love to see. And as an avid traveler, you know, I know I always fly American and I always stay in a Starwood hotel or, you know, Marriott hotel, right? Right. Because there's benefits to that. And I also want to be known. I want to be known. When I walk on to check in, I want them to welcome me back, Mr. Shaw. And they know how many times, they know my status. Like, I like that benefit. Okay. So right. I want them to succeed. So my answer to your question, my answer to your question is I want these brands to shift their leadership. They're not going to survive any other way. They're not going to get the employees back until leadership changes their attitude, that they respect their employees. They embrace the idea that their employees of the future have a self-employed mindset. To leverage that, you know, Keith Marcy and I, we were chatting before we began. I said, you know, fundamentally, there's such a simple concept. If the world can get this, the world would be different. And it is that people are basically decent people. Employees want to do a good job. The problem is there are so many relationships in the world that start off in an adversarial manner. Employees versus employers, you know, gender issues, color issues, race issues, you name it. Right. So many relationships start off oppositionally. If we all would just understand that fundamentally most humans want to be good humans, we could then leverage that opportunity to get the most out of them. That's the lesson I hope leadership gets. I hope leadership gets the lesson that fundamentally they have employees that actually want to do a really good job. They get shut down so quick by bad leadership. Don't shut them down. You'll get a lot out of them.
Work with them instead of above them all the time and show them some encouragement and be next to them and do that 100%. Job with them. You would have such a much happier crew. People will come to work on time. People won't be calling out.
Well,
things will be done better. I don't want to work for a shitty boss. I won't work for a shitty boss. I won't.
I was about to say, don't say that here.
I work too hard.
Well,
and put my all into my whatever I do because I have integrity, right? Not anymore. So, thank you. I've got to have the best boss, Keith.
Well, one of the big issues that are some of these bigger brands are having is that they had career people. They had banquet captains and banquet staff and catering people that worked for them for decades. And the pandemic happened, and these people truly believed that their brand would protect them, that they would stand behind them, and they didn't.
No.
They ran. They furloughed everybody. They gave zero benefits.
Yep.
And so now you have a whole group of people that are hardcore jaded. They are hardcore jaded. They're like, well, why should I be loyal to Hyatt? Why should I be loyal to Star Wars?
There's a whole generation. That's the entire mindset of millennials. I speak a lot in HR, in the age of human resources, which cracks me up because I've never had a job. Like, I mean, it's, a traditional job. And yet here I am, I speak at a lot of HR events. And that's one of the core things. So first of all, I always say, in order to open your mind and to understand the mindset of your employees, you have to look at their formative years. We all, as humans, how we see the world is largely formed in our significant formative years. So then, once I make the point, it's like, if your current primary workforce right now are millennials, let's look at their formative years. What happened in this world when they were between the ages of 8 and 16 years old, right? 9/11. And one of the key things—
they weren't selling chicken eggs, honey, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, exactly. One of the key things that they but one of the key things they saw was their parents getting let go from jobs that they thought they were going to have for the rest of their lives. So millennials have no belief in job security at all.
Nope.
Why should they?
Why should they? Right? Why should they at this point?
Why should they? So therefore, companies have to, I was consulting with a trucking company a while back. This trucking company, their biggest problem is they don't have drivers for the truck. Like, being a truck driver is not the sexiest job anymore. But here's the thing. When I went to see how they were recruiting their employees, they were promoting being a truck driver as a lifelong career choice. I'm like, nobody sees that as a wonderful career choice anymore. So I'll tell you what, here's your market. I asked them, I asked the CEO, how many months of training how long does an employee need to stay to make the investment in training pay off? And he said, if an employee stays 6 months to a year, they get their money back. It's like, fine. Then you know what you need to do? You need to market truck driving to mid-20-year-olds who got out of college, who found that their major no longer appeals to them and there isn't a job out there, and they need a year on the road to find themselves. There are your truck drivers of the future, right?
Rest stop at a time, darling.
One rest stop. And you can find a lot about life at a truck stop. <It's funny. laughs> You can make some big decisions at a truck stop.
Oh, my God. That's funny. Well, but, if you look at the current crisis, we had a bunch of problems with getting gas to different gas stations. Why? Because they didn't have enough qualified truck drivers to drive the gas tanks.
Right.
I mean, that shows you that even when you're talking about truck driving, it can have a major impact on our overall economy and our society at large.
Yep.
And it trickles down 100%. So, you don't have enough truck drivers that are able to drive gas tanks around. And then all of a sudden you have a gas shortage, which drives up pricing, which hits everybody's pocket.
Where's the mob? Where's the Teamsters? Where's the union now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then lumber, look at the cost of lumber. Look at that base, right? So now it's ridiculously expensive to build a house because it costs so much to get the lumber there because the cost of gas is so high. I mean, it goes on and on. And that, again, we started off, I talked about an ecosystem. This is exactly what an ecosystem is. So take that and just narrow it right down to your own personal business. And this is why it's so important that any small business owner works out the to having a healthy ecosystem of personal development, business strategies, and daily habits. Because if one thing is off, I can guarantee you working harder than you need to.
With regards to people having their own business, it does come with additional costs that you wouldn't normally occur, wouldn't normally be out of your pocket because your employer would be handling those for you. So a lot of times, my husband has been self-employed for God knows how many years, like 30 years. Mm-hmm. And he's got people that will say to him, how come you're making this? I'm not making that kind of money.
I love that.
And they don't understand that, yes, you make more money, but there's more risk involved. There's more expenses involved. And there's, those aspects as well. Yeah. So what do you say to, how do you explain to people that, it's okay to work for somebody else, but you can ask for things that are going to help you and satisfy your drive to further your, excel.
Yeah. I think, gosh, you hit so many good points. I mean, when it comes to individual business owners, I've always driven my businesses by profitability. Okay, that's what drives me. I've always, as a photographer, I always made sure my business was at least a 50%, 50 to 60% profit margin because I worked too damn hard to give too much of it away. So, and now in my current practice, coach speaking and all the things I do now, it's a 70% profit margin. 70% of every dollar goes into my pocket and I won't have it any other way. I'm also older. It's like I want, and we, because it's an information-based world, we can run really lean businesses. I mean, whenever I used to get the question, it used to be a really common question whenever I was interviewed on a podcast, people would say, let's say you were landed in a strange land. You don't know anybody and you had $300. How would you start a business? I'd say I'd buy, $100. I'd buy maybe a $50 podcasting mic, spend $50 on other technology. I'd take the other $200 and enjoy a good meal and a massage. Because the fact of the matter is with $100, I can start a podcast and I can get to know everybody in the village. Right. So it doesn't cost much to start a business. As far as being an employee and getting what you want, the burden of responsibility comes down to leadership. So I guess number one is do you have an open door to talk to your leader?
Right.
And if you don't, how do you get through that? The only thing I could say is that who's over that person or how do you get enough employees together? My previous book, which came out in 2018, was called Lingo. So Lingo is a brand messaging strategy. Okay. So it's a strategy, again, five-step process. I'm always creating a system, but it's a five-step process to deeply understand your ideal customers such that you can market yourself in a way that you're speaking their lingo, which means you're speaking to them in a way that just feels really personal and deep to them. As I say, to speak someone's lingo is to speak to their unspoken emotions. Okay. So the idea of Lingo, which I wrote the book, is a brand messaging strategy. It turns out people have adapted it in so many ways. And I'd say this would be another way. Like what I would do is probably step back and reflect on what is the lingo of your boss, of your lingo? What's the best way into that person's mind and heart? You may be familiar with the book, The Five Love Languages. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever come across that. Fantastic book. I mean, it changed my whole parenting when I realized I had three kids and all three of them had a different love language. Here, I was trying to parent them all the same. And I realized they have three entirely different love languages. Actually, my family of five, when I was married and had kids, we actually represented all five love languages. So similarly, it's like if you need to get through to somebody, be it your boss or a leader, take the time to step back. Like, what might their, let's refer to as their love language. What might their love language be? What might their leadership language be? How do you get through to them so you can break through the veneer to actually have a real conversation? So the burden of responsibility is both ways. I definitely see the bigger burden of responsibility on leaders to either get with the program or get out, right? And the program is we're humans, treat us as such. But there's also a burden of responsibility on employees to do the work to your own benefit to do the work to figure out what is the lingo of the person that I need to get through to. And how do I do that? Like, take the time to understand what are their emotional triggers? How do you get through to a real conversation? What's guarding them? And do that work.
Well, and I think they, I remember when I first got into the corporate world, and my mother, God bless her, because she got her engineering degree and then got bored and went back and got her law degree. So, you know, there's some smarts there. But she said, you have to learn how to manage up. And I felt like that was such a huge piece of advice.
That's
for somebody that was
just
getting into the workforce, how do you manage your bosses? Because everybody assumes that as an employee, you're to be managed because you have a manager, but you can also manage your managers. And I think that that's a real skill that I feel like more people need at this point.
It's how to get what you want. You know, when I was writing my second book, The Self-Employed Life, I had a concept. I began the outline, but I know that I'm going to write several books. I know I'm going to be a serial author. So I wanted to make sure I connected back to my first book. So I reached out to my editor of my first book, who I maintained, you know, very strong friendship with. My first book was self-published. I had my own editor. Second book is with a publisher. So I used their editor, who I also loved, but I also still relied on that connection with my first editor. And I sent the outline to her and I said, the problem is I'm not seeing a connection in these books and I don't want to be that author. Like it's like a sudden left turn. I said, I'm not saying, she actually sent me back a video because she was so irate. She goes, how are you not seeing this? She goes, your first book, Lingo, taught people how to set up the environment to get to attract their ideal customers through brand messaging. This book, The Self-Employed Life, literally, she said, you're literally using the term ecosystem environment. Helps people to create the environment in their business to get the results from their business they want.
Right.
What I realized and what you're pointing out, Keith, is that fundamentally that is how we get control. We get control of the results we want by setting up the environment. So if manage up, I love it as a term because it's to your advantage to learn how to manage up, to learn the lingo of the people you need to get through so that you're creating the environment for the result you want. If the result you want is XYZ, do the work to create the environment by knowing, getting to know that leader so that you get the results you want. It loops right around back to self-employment when the core challenge, I will say, of being self-employed, which is what inspired me to write this book, is because for years I've been asking people why they became self-employed, and everybody has the same answer, which is everybody becomes self-employed because they want to control their destiny. To which I say, how's that going for you? And everybody laughs, is like, yeah, not as I thought. And I was like, exactly, because the core problem of being self-employed is that while we set out to control our destiny and our futures, we're entering uncontrollable circumstances. The reason I created the self-employed ecosystem is because what I realized is that we can't control the world. We can't.
Right.
We can't control whether the sun is shining. The only thing we can control is the environment we set up for the results we want. That's
around you.
Yep. It's the key to success. The key to success is to create the environment, whether that's your website. That's why brand messaging is so important on your website. You need to create the environment so that your ideal customer sees it and feels like it's built just for them, right? You need to create the ecosystem for your entire business so that you get the results you want from all the hard work you put in. Everything in business and in life, for that matter, if you want to manage up, it's your job to control the environment. Get to know the leader that you need to get through. That's the key to success in getting through to people. If any of you've raised kids, you know, how do you get your kids to eat their vegetables? You make airplane noises.
Right? Hide it in bacon.
Hide it in bacon.
Hide it in bacon.
That's cute.
That's awesome. That's literally what she said.
I love it.
That's not what I love. Hashtag facts of facts. Hide it.
Well, but
create the environment. That's the key.
So, Jeff, you know, now that we're coming out of COVID, and we have so many, you know, businesses that are successful again that were, you know, self-employed people. What were some, can you give us like a couple of trait that you feel self-employed, successful self-employed people had in order to be able to survive COVID?
Yeah. Oh, good question. Yeah, those obvious ones, right? Certainly takes resilience.
Yeah.
It takes, you know, a lot of fortitude and patience. But I think some of the less obvious ones that I think really show up is the people that have survived this. No, because I'm trying to put the right words. So the people that have survived this the best and will thrive as a result of the pandemic are people that evolved who they already were and are and didn't just necessarily pivot. I actually grew to hate the word pivot during the pandemic because I was like, because you know, the problem with that is that for small businesses in particular, a pivot implies that it's a sharp turn to the left or the right. When the reality is that what you probably needed to do was just evolve something you were already doing. Okay. So look at online education, right? Look how quickly the schools evolved to what will likely be the educational model of the future. I interviewed a director of education of a very large university on my podcast, and we got talking about that. And he had said that his university had a 7-year plan to convert classes to online education, which they accomplished in a week when they needed to.
Wow.
Right?
That's a plan in place.
A crisis just speeds up what was coming anyway. It really does. It just speeds up what was coming anyway. So I think one of the characteristics that really showed up and separated the people that are thriving in the future is I've actually referred to as dropping in. And what I mean by that is the people that kind of, because the pandemic gave us time, the people that kind of dropped into themselves, dropped into what's their core purpose? Why are they really here? Who is it that they really want to serve? And decide to not work with any non-ideal customers. The people that dropped in to themselves and then evolved from that. They got their business got more clear. They tapped into their deepest passions of what's important to them. One of the tools that I provide my clients with to help them do this kind of dropping in work is I ask them, what drives you crazy? Here's why I offer that as a question.
Don't get mouthy because you're miles away and I can't get to you, darling. Yeah.
What we find is that usually what drives us crazy becomes a motivator to what we want to fix in the world and what we want to do. Right. So if you understand like what drives me crazy is seeing at the end of the day, it's even more basic. What drives me crazy is seeing people be overlooked. Drives me crazy on a personal level. It's why I'm an advocate for diversity, advocate for the LGBTQ community. I contribute whatever effort I can to, racial issues. And because it drives me crazy to see somebody, for any reason, to not be accepted and to be pushed back. I feel that same way about small businesses. It drives me crazy to see small, particularly the smallest of businesses, self-employed, the businesses of one, to see them not get the attention they deserve, to see talent go to waste drives me crazy to the point that I'm willing to show up, fight hard, do the work that I do. So at the end of the day, so often we can really tap into dropping into ourselves and those that did it by really looking at what really drives you crazy. And the pandemic afforded people time to do that work. And those that did that work, I think, are far better off for it because they're more passionate. They're clear on their core message. Their brand message is more clear.
Right.
Therefore, they're going to be more clearly understood by the people they're meant to serve.
So a friend of mine actually talked about ROI and ROI being return on investment. But there's another acronym that ROI could stand for in that it's return on involvement. It's what you put into your cerebro. And I always that's like one of the phrases that has always stuck with me. His name is Vince Dress. He's with NACE. And so that's always kind of stuck with me because it's what are you putting into something to get out of it what you want. Yep. Because if you're not putting anything into it, what are you expecting back?
Yeah. Yeah, and
at least get what you need at that. You know, if anything, settle for that if you can't climb that other mountain. You know,
and it's a layer of authenticity that the word authenticity doesn't even do it justice, honestly.
Right.
You know, authenticity in business becomes such a buzzword, but Marcy, what you're speaking to is absolutely true. This is, I think, the biggest surprise to self-employed business owners, because I've asked so many of them. Every self-employed business owner knows that they're going to work hard. They're willing to. They know to some degree that they're going to be challenged personally. Every self-employed person I have ever asked has also said the personal growth required of them was far greater than they expected. You know, I always say, being self-employed is like personal development on steroids, because every button is going to get pushed at a faster pace. You're going to encounter more in life. You know, my son, my 28-year-old son is such a doer. He's so successful. Last week, he got hit by a car on his bicycle. Very serious. He's okay. He has two broken ribs. But, I mean, made a huge dent on the hood of the car and smashed the windshield. So that's what the impact was. So that was on Monday of last week. He texts me from the ambulance. I was just glad he was able to text. That's Tuesday. Somebody rear-ends him on the highway.
Oh, no.
Crazy, right? Oh, my. So I emailed him. I mean, what do you say to your son when they're in this? So I wrote back and said, doers are going to encounter more. The fact of the matter is, if you're a doer, if you're out in the world, the more you do. Because he wasn't somebody who, with two broken ribs, was going to sit at home. He was back. The reason he was on the highway is because he was going to a meeting. Because he's a doer. Wow. So the more you're a doer, the more you're going. Right. That's why being self-employed, being career focused, that's why it's like personal development on steroids, because you're out there doing. You're going to encounter more, see more. So that's why I love the idea of return on involvement, because it is, you know, it's doing that inner work. This is, I think, the biggest surprise to self-employed business owners is that they know their buttons are going to be pushed, but not to the degree they don't expect the degree of personal development it's going to require and what they really need to find in themselves in order to succeed.
Well, I found, you know, your comment earlier when you said crisis speeds up what was going to happen anyway. I found that like so insightful, because, you know, I was thinking about, well, what about these businesses that did end up having to go out of business? Would they have gone out of business anyway, regardless of COVID, because they weren't flexible or they didn't have the right practices in place? And I was like, wow, that's
a good point.
Very telling.
Is anyone surprised that Sears went out of business?
No.
I mean, they've been irrelevant for 12 years. Like, who even knows? And the shame of it is they didn't have to be irrelevant. Like, they could have been like such an American brand, which actually would have sold really well over the last few years. Like the very Americana, they could have, but they didn't.
But they were too stuck.
Yeah, they were too stuck. So it's rarely a surprise. I mean, so many, particularly big brands. And I mean, it's kind of like, oh, you know, sad. You're sad to see something iconic go, but then you're like, I'm not entirely surprised. You know, Macy's is one of those brands. I really want to see them hang in there but you wonder, it's like, what do they stand for right now other than fireworks and a parade? Like, they need to define like why you go to Macy's over something else. And they're going to lose it if they don't find that. That's the dropping into yourself, and the leadership needs to get to work. So it's rarely a surprise. We might not like it, but it's rarely a surprise when you see, well, I mean, is it a surprise? I mean, if it is a surprise to any employer that their employees want to work remotely, you haven't been listening for the past 10 years. Like, come
especially
on.
The last 6 months, you know, especially the last year. I mean,
exactly. I mean, yeah. I mean, is that really a surprise that people want to work remotely? There's no surprise to this. There really isn't.
Speaking of the soft side of Sears, I just wore a whisper of a lash and I thought about that. Like, oh, you know, I used to hear the softer side of Sears on the TV and the radio, and I don't even.
Because, you know, obviously they needed to be flexible. And I think that's one thing that, you know, if you're out there and you're about to make to be self-employed, you got to learn how to be flexible, because
like the dust ones,
you never know what's going to be thrown at you at any point. I mean, it is crazy, some of the stuff that I would have never even thought of. Like, you know, everything I thought about being self-employed was completely incorrect. Yeah. When I was dreaming it, you know, when yeah. I'm thinking about it, it was 100% incorrect.
Yeah.
And it was only because that I was willing to adjust what I was seeing and adjust how I was practicing my business that I was able to stay in business. And I think, you know, people get kind of stuck on, well, I worked so hard on my business plan. I worked so hard on, you know, making these exact specific decisions and choices and what have you. And then they don't allow themselves to be flexible and to adjust to the ever-changing environment. Yeah.
Yeah. I, you know, it's there's a good chance my next book will be about paradoxes because I love paradoxes. Like
that's cool.
All right. But I'm not sure again. I'm not sure how it ties into with my repertoire of books, my portfolio of books, but I love paradoxes because honestly, I think if you can find the sweet spot between what appear to be opposites, it's like the answer to so many things. And I refer to what you're referring to. I call it the goal paradox because we know we can't move forward in our businesses and our lives without having goals. But goals can also be your biggest stumbling block, particularly today, because if you're too focused. So the way I refer to it in my book is to have a directional vision. Okay. Yeah. Not a goal oriented vision, but a directional vision. You know the direction you want to go in. You might even know the destination or what it feels like. It might even be what you're visualizing. But I'll tell you what, in today's world, you can't possibly have any idea how you're going to get there. And I did a podcast once where I recalled it, which I think is a good term for it. I call it follow on what's unfolding. Your best goal strategy today, if you want to put it in terms of goal, and I told you I'm very tangible. I like to give people tangible tools. Their best strategy is to have a directional vision as to where you want to go and where you want to get to, and then go on that journey with an attitude of following what's unfolding because it's unfolding right at your feet. Not just the challenges, but also the opportunities. And if you're so focused on your goals, in today's fast-changing world, there are opportunities. We're post-pandemic. This is a ripe opportunity. If you're stuck in your mind that you need to do things a certain way, you're not going to thrive. But if if you have a willingness to follow what's unfolding and saying, didn't see this coming, what do I make of it?
Right. Good point.
So, Jeffrey, wherever you go, there you are.
So, Jeffrey, I want to say thank you so much for being on the show. I mean, I have learned a ton, even out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. So I just want to say thank you so much. I can't believe it's already been an hour. So if you want to follow Jeffrey, go to www.jeffreyshaw.com or buy his book, The Self-Employed Life. What was the other book? Because I know that it became a bestseller, right?
The other book is Lingo.
Lingo.
Lingo is also available. And you can actually, a great URL place to start with is theselfemployedlife.me. That's the world of self-employment for you. Both books are there.
I love it.
Tons of free resources. So theselfemployedlife.me will provide you whatever you need if you're self-employed.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for another amazing Behind the Veil. Marcy Berg with An Affair to Remember. Marcy, Brooke Logan Stoner, and of course, Jeffrey Shaw, The Self-Employed Life. Thank you guys so much. We will see you next Tuesday at 2:00. But for now, everybody, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, guys. Bye. Hold on.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.